I'm Jessica Harris, and welcome to my welcome table. I'm going to be at the welcome table. Gather round this special table. It's scarred with memories, pitted with burn spots from hot skillets, and decorated with moisture rings from frosty glasses of lemonade, beer bottles, bourbon and ginger ale, and untold goblets of red wine. This table will be our flying carpet as we travel around the world. I'll share some of my secret spots. We'll meet new friends and reconnect with old ones. Sometimes, the table will be covered with fine Porthot linen and my mother's bone china, and we'll sup on caviar and champagne. Other times, we'll cover it with yesterday's news and hanker down for a crawfish boil or a lobster supper. Whatever the meal, by the end of our time together, we'll have shared some special friends, sacred spots, and the food, drink, and music that connects them. So come, join me at my welcome table.
Hi, my name's Mitzi Pratt, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
I'm Patrick Dunn, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
My name is John Barkley, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
My name is Anne McBride, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
I'm Betty Fussell, and I, too, am sitting at the welcome table.
Compass point, 10.67 degrees north, 61.30 degrees west, Trinidad and Tobago. Trinidad and Tobago has always loomed large on my Caribbean horizon. I've long been intrigued by the dual island nation's mix of history and as a place where the cultures of the world all come together. I'll never forget my first trip there in the 1970s when I was travel editor at Essence magazine. Then, I was surprised by a cityscape that was more urban than many of the Caribbean capitals that I knew. But it was not too urban, and I loved the city's hills and the over-the-top gingerbread mansions that lined one side of the Queen's Park Savannah. I was captivated by restaurants with names like the Kapok Inn and Mangles, where you could go in one door and have some of the best Chinese food you'd ever had in the world, and in another door and have some of the best Indian. And the food was quite simply sublime, combining East and West. Most of all, I loved the national aesthetic that was exuberant and joy-filled and exploded once a year in the celebration of Carnival. I haven't been back, but I remembered it fondly, and when given the opportunity to return last year, jumped at it, dreaming of my younger days when a beach excursion called for a bathing suit and not a muumuu, and when memories came without the slightly bittersweet tinge of nostalgia.
People are interested to know where Calypso originated. People are interested to know where Calypso originated. Some say it came from Cuba, some said British Guiana. Some contend seriously it was sung by Moses crossing the Red Sea. But I told them, no, no, oh no, Trinidad is the land of Calypso. No, no, oh no, Trinidad is the land of Calypso.
Trinidad, Tobago. Columbus noted the two islands on his fourth journey in 1498, but because of the fierceness of the native peoples, it took almost a century before settlement was established in the northern part of Trinidad in 1584. Trinidad's history is more turbulent than those of the islands to the north and rings with names like Ponce de Leon, Edward Teach, better known as Blackbeard the Pirate, and others. It was Spanish and then French, before becoming British in 1797. Sister Island Tobago had even more twists and turns in its history, going back and forth between the Dutch, the French, the Latvian, English, Dutch, French, Dutch again, and all of that before 1674. The French and the British brought sugar cultivation to the islands, both of them, and they both became prosperous sugar islands, with enslaved Africans laboring under the oversight of Europeans. But today, we're just concentrating on Trinidad. Following Trinidad's emancipation, of African slaves in 1838, Trinidad's population would change again. The first sign of that change occurred on May 10, 1845, when the Fatel Razak brought 217 indentured immigrants with names like Fuchan, Moti, Gopal, Ramchun, Pura, and others to Trinidad. Indentured Indians replaced enslaved Africans on the island's plantations and worked in conditions that differed from enslavement in little more than name. During the period of immigration between 1845 and 1917, a total of 143,939 people arrived from the Indian subcontinent. In addition to Indians, Chinese indentured immigrants would arrive in a steady stream between 1853 and 1866. And after that year, the Chinese government kind of got wise and insisted on free return passage. Legal Chinese immigration decreased enormously. It was very costly. But it continued from Guyana, British Guyana, in South America. Anyhow, the Chinese also formed the basis of a sizable community. The Indian and the Chinese hand, along with that of the Africans and of the island's multiple European cultures, which include French, English, Portuguese, and more, gave birth to a unique Trinidadian mixture that is seen in the faces of the people, heard in the teasing lyrics of calypso and the harmonies of steel pan music, witnessed in the exuberance of carnival, and tasted constantly in the multicultural country's food. At first approach, Port of Spain seems to offer more to the businessman than the tourist. Streets bustle with folks whose clear intention is getting somewhere to do something, without too much of the slow and easy pace of many other Caribbean capitals. But a closer look reveals an almost Iberian sensibility. Behind gates and on patios, folks are settling in for relaxation and chats with friends over a rum punch or two. The Trinidadian term is lime, and a good lime is a day spent with friends doing not much of anything other than enjoying each other's company over a drink or two or more of rum, and maybe eating on a little something while basking in the sun on the beach or on the back of an affluent buddy's boat. East and West come together in Port of Spain's markets, where ingredients from Europe, Africa, China, and the Indian subcontinent come together on vendor tables. Asian vegetables like long beans and bitter melon turn up on the other side of the world, next to cassava and arrowroot that's more typical of the region. Culantro, a cilantro-like herb that is frequently used in the cooking of Puerto Rico and on some other Caribbean islands, is a major taste here. But here it is known as Chardon Béni, or Chardon Béni, a corruption of the French Chardon Béni, or Blessed Thistle. It is part of the green seasoning that is a Trinidadian culinary basic. What pesto is in Italy, green seasoning is in Trinidad. In the market, smoked herring and saltfish that season some of the Indian-inflected dishes are sold right next to pickled pig snouts and tails that hark back to the diets of the enslaved Africans. But overall, condiments are king on the tables and are prepared from shaved mango, limes, lemons, and other tropical fruits and vegetables, blended with mustard oil, hot chilies, and innumerable seasonings.
Chick-a-chick-boom, chick-boom, a chick-a-chick-boom, chick-boom. Now since you're in the room with the Trinidad lady,
My favorite guide for Trinidad market visit, and indeed for all things Trinidadian relating to food, is Chef Deborah Sardinia Metivier. Her name alone seems to encompass much of Trinidad's cosmopolitan history, and there are few people who are wiser about the island's culinary traditions and taste profile.
Hi, I'm Deborah Sardinia Metivier, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
Welcome, Deborah. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Jessica. It's great to be here with you.
I want to talk a little bit about Trinidadian food, and I want to start out by asking you, how would you define the Trinidadian taste profile?
I think it's extremely eclectic, but eclectic where there is a distinct unison and marriage between the natural spices that the various ethnic groups have brought to the island. And then it has evolved into some very unique, what we call, I would say, signature dishes and little bites that definitely represent our culture. And there is that, while we do have heat in terms of our pepper sauce and condiments, and maybe one or two spicy dishes, but there is just a really great layering of flavor that's happened from all of these various groups coming together.
How would you define, or what would you say are maybe three of those signature Trinidadian dishes?
I would say definitely, we are definitely known for, I would say, the Indian influence comes in our doubles, which is our street food, which is the traditional. It started off as a breakfast fare, but it's basically become an all-day fare. Doubles normally would come out, double vendors would come out early in the morning, and I would say by 9 o'clock, basically, they're done for the day. But we now have doubles pretty much throughout the course of the day into the evening and into the late evening. So it's basically, I would say, it has stretched and evolved into a snack that people have throughout the course of the day. Doubles is an actual, the best way to describe it is the barra, which is the bread, is like a soft, should be like a soft little pillow. It's nice and fluffy and airy, and it's a yeast dough that actually, when it's fried, the dough itself tends to float to the top. So it's nice and light and airy, and we would take two of those and fill it, open it up, and fill it with a nice chickpea or chana, which has a little influence of a light saffron, maybe a little bit of garlic. It's very, very tasty, but not hot. The heat comes when you then decide, you tell the vendor what you want, whether you want the pepper sauce, which is the Scotch bonnet or habanero pepper, or whether you want, we have various condiments with tamarind sauce or even a little cucumber chutney. You have some vendors are known for specific condiments, and by the time they layer those items on that, it just is like eating a little smack of heaven. I would say then you have the pilau, which is a cook-up rice and peas dish, which is definitely Trini in terms of our version, and that influence definitely is going to come from the African, where what you do is you will season up your meat or chicken with our local spices. We have a little flavoring pepper that we call pimento, which is not hot, but it has a very unique flavor. It's a very rounded flavor that has a little bit of depth to it as well without the spice. And your garlic, and we have green seasoning, which is a combination of various herbs and thyme, and so there's a distinct flavor coming out of that. You will season that meat up with that and let it sit for at least a half an hour to marinate, so it tends to infuse everything that's coming together nicely. And then the key for us is to caramelize some sugar in the pot, so that will give us that browning effect. We will then throw the meat into the pot and let it coat it, and let it sort of simmer in that. It will sort of spring its own water, as we say. The natural juices will come out from the chicken, and you may add a little bit additional stock and let that bubble for a little while, and all the flavors, the browning color is going to come out nicely, coat the chicken. And then we're going to add some pigeon peas to that. And if you wanted to finish it off, you could add some diced pumpkin and carrots and parboiled rice and let that just simmer nicely. So all those flavors come together, and we call it palau. It's a cook up chicken and rice and bean dish.
Oh, that sounds gorgeous. I'm hungry now.
I want you young men to realize that these are the days to economize. Though your wife may need a crab and a callaloo, stew beef or pork and pound planting too, but the time is too hard to get that today. And so you got to feed the wife the easiest way, like the coolies. Bhaji, pilori, dal bhat and dal puri, chana, paratha, and the aloo ketal curry.
Port of Spain is also a restaurant city, where sophisticated spots highlight not only European cuisine and the food of China and India, but also showcase Trinidadian cuisine. Chef Khalid Mohammed's restaurant, Show Creole, presents innovative dishes that play with Trinidadian traditions and ingredients in new ways that delight taste buds. It's a little tiny gingerbready cottage, and you walk in and are just hit with these amazing tastes that are like nowhere else in the world. Street food also abounds in Port of Spain, with Indian names like Sahina, Alu Pai, and Baghani. Trinis, as Trinidadians call themselves, are nibblers. Eating on the street is a way of life, and at times it seems as though everyone is munching away on a snack or sipping from a coconut or lined up awaiting the next tidbit. One of the things that I noticed on my first trip there was a line of men, or actually several lines of men, lined up in front of different vendor stands along the Queen's Park Savannah. I was informed that it was Saturday night, and they were getting their mangrove oysters, which they were slurping down with wild abandon. I later found out that the mangrove oysters are reputed to have prodigious aphrodisiac qualities. Welcome to Trini food. No visit to Trinidad would be complete without a taste of roti. Roti is to Trinidad what jerk is to Jamaica. The street snack takes the name of the Indian flatbread that is the wrapper for the curried filling that can be prepared from a variety of ingredients, ranging from chickpeas to chicken. In the Caribbean, street food with its bathing suit on is beach food. And here again, Trinidadians excel. Maracas Bay is one of the country's beautiful beaches that is close enough to the capital so that Trinis can head out on the weekend for a good lime. Indeed, Trinis have been known to head out to the beach on weekdays, working under a schedule that tends more toward laissez-faire than workaholic. No Maracas Bay beach lime is complete without a taste of bacon shark. As one person put it, bacon shark is to a beach outing what plum pudding is to Christmas. Essential. So, it was off to the beach for a sample of the white flaky fish that shark turned out to be, and the fried bread known as bakes. The condiments from the marketplace all turned up. I was really surprised. It was an enormous great buffet of condiments, and each person customizes his or her own dish with everything from simple tomatoes and lettuce to a white garlic sauce that's kind of creamy, a variety of different kind of chutneys, including my favorite mango, my Trinidadian favorite condiment, which is a shaved green mango seasoned with chili and mustard oil that's called cuchela, tamarind sauce, and even the Shadow Benny-infused green seasoning. So all are drizzled on the shark and bake to the diner's taste and then consumed with great glee. Now, the interesting thing is that Trinis seem to have no need to wait 2 hours before going back into the water. They head right on back in.
East Indians like their dal and chutney. Italians like their macaroni. But ever since I'm the age of two, a ball for crab and sweet callaloo.
Eating a home-cooked meal with family retains its importance throughout the Caribbean region, and Sunday dinner is the time when some of the nation's classics are sampled, thus passing on the country's taste profiles to a new generation. Two dishes are sure to turn up on the table in Trinidad: a verdant callaloo, whipped into a froth with a wonderful traditional whisk, which is just a strip of a branch with four-pronged smaller branches coming out from it. It's called a swizzle stick, and it's sort of used as a swizzle stick would be. It froths up the leafy green callaloo, that is Trinidad's cousin to Louisiana's gumbo, and it's often served in tandem with crab. Another Sunday special is stewed oxtail. It's dense, deeply flavorful, and immensely satisfying. It's also why so many Trinidadian kitchens boast pressure cookers. Want to try some Trini food at home? Pick up a copy of Sweet Hands, Island Cooking from Trinidad and Tobago by Ramin Ganeshram, who is a wonderful food writer who captures the not only recipes of her native Trinidad, but also the culinary ethos of that country. You'll be well served. Beach food, street food, and old-fashioned home cooking are only part of what's on the menu for this nation of nibblers. The full array is trotted out each year for Carnival, the full-on celebration of all things Trinidadian, from music to art to, yes, Trinidadian street food.
Carnival is a bacchanal, so we
don't care.
It's a Creole fest that we can't forget to do.
Oh, we don't care.
We're gonna start the amusement in the tent, so
oh, we don't care.
Go with me bottle and spoon when I play the tune, do.
We don't care.
Now, I've watched competing escuelas de samba as they have their moment of glory dancing down the Sambadromo in Rio. I've partied to samba reggae and danced to trio eléctrico music in the streets of Bahia. I've even celebrated at Jamaica's carnival and been to more than one Mardi Gras parade. I've been to carnival in Tenerife, Spain. I tend to miss Labor Day carnival in Brooklyn, which is around the corner from my house, because I'm usually arriving home at the last minute from summer vacation just in time to see straggling revelers head home. But the one thing I've missed is participating in Carnival in Trinidad that has produced such amazing spectacles as Peter Minshall's River, a three-day work of living, moving theater art which has entered into Carnival legend. I've missed whining and chipping my way down into the savannah. And if you don't know what whining and chipping are, ask a Trini. Whining is how you move your boom boom, and chipping is that little back, 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 front, 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 front step that takes you all the way through Carnival. But I ain't through. Now, I'm not crazy about crowds, but Carnival in Trinidad is on my bucket list. I want to listen to the growing cacophony and feel the surge of the crowd as it moves down the hills into town on Juve morning. Juve morning, Carnival's official opening at 2 a.m. on Monday morning before Ash Wednesday, comes from the French, jour ouvert, opening day, open day. That's the day Carnival officially begins. Now, my friend Deborah and a group of Carnival diehard friends from other islands in the Caribbean have promised to let me tag along one year. And if I can't chip my way down the hill, I can at least eat my way through Carnival under Deborah's tutelage.
Everybody! 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 Come!
I have one other question I want to ask you, which is Carnival. What are the three things or the four things one should taste if you're down in the middle, somewhere near the savannah for Carnival?
I think you have a range of things, but I think on the list would definitely be a corn soup, where that is basically a huge pot that is boiling and simmering with it normally is a traditional local corn, which is a little tougher in kernel, in the kernels. We actually, it's not the sweet corn that has a softer kernel. Our kernel is a little bit harder. So you're going to get some texture on that. That's cut up in small pieces, and it boils so that it has a distinct, it has a rich corn flavor. That's going to come true. And it's sort of thickened with a little bit of pumpkin and sometimes yellow split peas with onions and garlic and the pimento. And so all of those things just, and we actually will boil that split peas and pumpkin until it actually just sort of infuses into the liquid without having to pulse it under. It's going to break down from just the continual boil. And by the time all of that comes together, probably a little size and onions and garlic, as I said, you have a wonderful, it's great for, in Trinidad at Carnival, there's a lot of parties. And it kind of is a great sober tool. It's a kind of kick back after you've had a great time fetting with a little bit of corn soup. And then the carnival food is evolving every season. I mean, you have these huge fets, as we call it. And so the thing about it is, just as we have the music and we like to lime, as we say, which is basically party, the other thing that is a big part of this whole event is the food fair. So the same doubles is evolving, where we now have gourmet doubles. And you would find that sometimes in a party where you would see the doubles being filled with even a little curry chicken, maybe some shrimp or lobster. So it's being elevated. You can either have the traditional doubles or you can go with the gourmet doubles. But I think if you've never had doubles, you need to experience some doubles. And it will be all around at carnival time.
And when the Yankees first went to Trinidad, some of the young girls were more than glad. They said that the Yankees treat them nice, and they give them a better price. They buy rum and Coca-Cola.
No carnival would be complete without proper lubrication, and a visit to the Caribbean island where the song Rum and Coca-Cola originated would not be complete without a sip or two of the local elixir. Over the years and throughout my Caribbean travels, I've probably had what's more than my fair share of rum and coke, or even rum punch. And I've even had that in Trinidad. But there, I think not only of the traditional tipple, I also think of Angostura. Not the rum, but the bitters that are known worldwide and are actually purveyors to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. Angostura bitters was developed from local aromatics for use as a tonic by Dr. Johann Gottlieb Benjamin Siegert, a German who was Surgeon General in Simon Bolivar's army in Venezuela. He began to sell the bitters in 1824 from his base in the town of Angostura, now known as Ciudad Bolivar. In 1875, he moved the plant to Port of Spain, Trinidad, and there it remains. Now, the exact formula, how much of this, how much of that, is a closely guarded secret and locked down like Fort Knox. There are only 5 people in the world who know the complete recipe. The bitters are extremely concentrated. They're actually 44.7% alcohol by volume. But since you're only using a dash or two in a cocktail or in a dish, they're considered non-alcoholic, so even teetotalers can enjoy a dash in their lemonade. A lesser-known but often useful fact is that in a pinch, the bitters can be used as a mosquito repellent, a good thing to remember in a zone where the no-see-ums can be mortal enemies. But mosquitoes taken care of, glass in hand, memories stowed, and plans to head for carnival 1 year firmly implanted in my brain. It's time for me to leave Trinidad's multicultural island and head back to the winter-locked north. So, until next time.
Keep my skillet good and greasy when I'm gone, gone, gone. Keep my skillet good and greasy when I'm gone. Keep my skillet good and greasy.